Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I'm a resident. This is episode 161 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. I'm really hoping that this really hoping that this podcast is short, but I'm titling this the Clutch Autoantibody Podcast. Basically, I just wanted to make a podcast where in one area you can essentially see like all the different high-yield autoantibodies that are classically tested on the USMLE exams. So, what if they give you a question about a patient that, you know, has like morning stiffness and they will have to like, you know, like work out for like an hour to get rid of that stiffness, and they have like ulnar deviation of their hands? What kind of autoantibody will be found in those people? Well, I would hope you're thinking that these people have rheumatoid arthritis, right? So obviously they should have antibodies against the rheumatoid factor, right? Remember, rheumatoid factor is actually quite sensitive for rheumatoid arthritis, like 80% sensitive. It's about 80-85%. But yes, about 80% of people that have rheumatoid arthritis, they will have positive rheumatoid factor. And then remember the anti-CCP antibodies, right? You also find those in rheumatoid arthritis. They're very specific for the diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis. And then, if a person has, what if they give you a question about a patient that has a Miller rash? What kind of autoantibody will they have? Well, I would hope you're telling me that, they have like ANA being positive, right? Remember, ANA is very sensitive for lupus. About 98% of patients that have lupus will have a positive ANA. But the thing is, ANA is not very specific for lupus, right? I mean, like think about it. Like, if, for example, a person has, If a person has, like, mixed connective tissue disease, 100% of patients with mixed connective tissue disease, believe it or not, will have a positive ANA, right? So ANA is not very specific for, for lupus, right? If you're looking in terms of specificity for lupus, you want to look more to antibodies like anti-Smith, anti-double-stranded DNA, stuff like that. Those are the ones you'd want to look to for the diagnosis of lupus. And then what if they give you a question about a patient that is having like marital problems because she has a lot of pain with sexual intercourse and she also has dry mouth? What's your diagnosis? So that's Sjogren's syndrome, right? Remember, Sjogren's is associated with like anti-RHO antibodies. So those are antibodies against SSA, and then anti-LA antibodies, antibodies against SSB, right? Those are associated with Sjogren's, right? And remember, those other antibodies can cross the placenta and cause like a third degree, or I guess you can call it a complete heart block in the fetus, right? So that's one you want to keep at the back of your mind for tests. And then, although remember that, you know, crossing the the placenta and causing third degree heart block, that is not just found in in Sjogren's, but you also find it in lupus, like in SLE. And you also find it in Lyme disease as well. Now, what's the only pathology tested on MBME exams that's associated with C. ANCA? So it's actually like granulomatosis with polyangiitis, right? So like Wegener's is C. ANCA positive. What are the high-yield MBME pathologies that are associated with P. ANCA? Well, ulcerative colitis, believe it or not, has an association with P. ANCA. Primary sclerosing cholangitis also has an association with P. ANCA. Polyarthritis nodosa also has an association with P. ANCA, right? Eosinophilic granulomatosis with polyangiitis, aka Churg-Strauss, also has an association with P. ANCA. Microscopic polyangiitis also has an association with P. ANCA, okay? So those are all things you want to keep at the back of your mind with P. ANCA. And then, what are the high-yield autoantibodies associated with a patient that has like proximal muscle and shoulder like weakness? And then they tell you that their creatine kinase is elevated. What is that? Right? That's like some variant of polyodermatomyositis, right? Remember, these tend to be associated with like anti-JO1 antibodies, right? And anti-MI2 antibodies. If I'm not mistaken, anti-JO1 antibodies, occasionally they may not give you anti-JO1, but they may ask you like, oh, what is, like literally, what is the anti-JO1 antibody? Remember that it's an antibody against tRNA synthetase, right? So that's a high-yield thing you want to keep at the back of your mind. But yes, polymyositis, dermatomyositis has associations with anti-JO1, anti-MI2 antibodies. And then there is this thing, there's this other antibody as well, antibodies against like the signal recognition peptide, so anti-SRP antibodies. You also find those in poly or dermatomyositis. And then what if they give you a question about a patient that, you know, just been having like bleeding gums, and the you give your CBC and you notice everything is fine, but the platelet count is like 20,000. What's your diagnosis there? That's ITP, right? That's ITP. And remember that ITP, right, it's where you make autoantibodies against the GP2B3A, right? Don't confuse that with Glanzmann thrombocytopenia or Glanzmann's disease, where you have a deficiency of GP2B3A. And then, what if they give you a question about a person that just has like autoimmune hemolytic anemia, right? Remember, autoimmune hemolytic anemia, right, tends to arise in the setting of lupus, right? That's a big one you want to keep in mind. And then, what if they give you a question about like a 45-year-old female that for the last 6 months, she has been having jaundice, she has been having pruritic episodes, and they tell you that she's also been having, like they show you like some labs, like some LFTs, and you notice that she has a conjugated hyperbilirubinemia. What's your diagnosis? That's primary biliary cholangitis, right? And that person will have a positive AMA antibodies, right? So like anti-mitochondrial antibodies. And then, what if a person has like systemic sclerosis, right? So like the systemic scleroderma. What is the autoantibody that's associated with that? Well, that's your anti-SCL70 antibody, right? Sometimes it's called the anti-topoisomerase antibody. And then, so anti-like topoisomerase 1. Contrast this with like the limited scleroderma, right? So like the crest scleroderma where people have the pentad of like calcinosis, renal phenomenon, esophageal dysmotility, so they can have like really bad GERD, and then they'll have like sclerodactyly, so like weirdness of their fingers, and then they'll have telangiectasias on the skin. Crest scleroderma, right, also called limited scleroderma, is associated with anti-centromere antibodies. So that's a big one you want to keep at the back of your mind. And then, what if they give you a question about a patient that was recently started on treatment for TB, and this patient has a Miller rash? What's your diagnosis? That's drug-induced lupus, right? And remember, drug-induced lupus is associated with antihistone antibodies. And remember your drugs that can cause drug-induced lupus, right? So like your sulfonamides, hydralazine, isoniazid, procainamide, etanercept, those are all associated with drug-induced lupus. So they can very easily write a question about a patient that has WPW syndrome that is well controlled, that has like a Miller rash, right? That would be pretty classic drug-induced lupus. So just something to keep at the back of your mind, or a patient that was recently, again, started on treatment for TB that has a whatever. So just, again, drug-induced lupus, anti-histone antibodies. And then if a person has mixed connective tissue disease, what autoantibody are you thinking about? Well, I would really hope you're thinking about antibodies against the U1 ribonucleoprotein, right? So anti-U1 RNP antibodies have a, you know, pretty strong association with a mixed connective tissue disease. And then, what is the autoantibody that is associated with post-infectious glomerulonephritis? Well, I would hope that you're telling me that it's ASO, right? So like anti-streptolysin O antibodies, and also antibodies against DNase B, so anti-DNase B antibodies. Remember, those are very specific for like a strep skin infection, right? That's the ultimate etiology of a person having a post-infectious glomerulonephritis. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient that is like 17 years old and has diabetes, right? Like, you know, thin but has diabetes, right? You're probably thinking about like type 1 diabetes. The autoantibodies you want to remember there, right? They're like the big ones you want to remember, like autoantibodies against essentially anti-islet cell antibodies, but there are some specific ones, like the most common one is like anti-GAD antibodies, so anti-glutamate decarboxylase antibodies, and also there's also antibodies against IA2, right? So those are the big high-yield antibodies you want to keep at the back of your mind with type 1 diabetes. And then if a person has, hypothyroidism, what is the most common cause of hypothyroidism in the U.S.? Well, I hope you're telling me Hashimoto's, right? Remember, Hashimoto's has associations with the autoantibodies you find in Hashimoto's, right, are like autoantibodies against autoantibodies against anti-thyroperoxidase antibodies, anti-thyroglobulin antibodies, right? And then the close cousin of Hashimoto's, right, I guess maybe you can think of it as a person that's hyperthyroid, right? Think about Graves' disease. Remember, Graves' disease classically has associations with thyroid stimulating immunoglobulin, right? So you make like stimulating antibodies against the TSH receptor. And then if a person has, you know, like, you know, they tell you that, you know, like 45-year-old female, trouble swallowing, droopy eyes, and she notices that her eyes get more droopy by the end of the day, right? That's classic myasthenia gravis. Remember, those people make autoantibodies against the nicotinic acetylcholine receptor, right? So that's a big one you want to keep at the back of your mind. And then remember that if you form anti-RH antibodies, right, that's associated with hemolytic disease of the newborn, right? But occasionally your friends at the MBME, right, they'll write these questions where a person has hemolytic disease of the newborn, but it arises from like other kinds of antibodies. The most popular one on MBMEs is at the anti-KEL, K-E-L-L antibodies. So that's when you'd want to, you know, commit to memory for exams. And then what if they give you a question about a patient that, you know, has like a really bad encephalitis, and they tell you that, oh, they recently had like, I don't know, like some kind of viral upper respiratory infection, or they recently got like a viral style vaccine, or they recently had like a VZV outbreak. I hope under those circumstances, you're thinking about like autoimmune encephalitis. That tends to be associated with antibodies against the NMDA receptor. That's a pretty classic. Again, you may say, Divine, some of these antibodies you are mentioning, I've never heard of them before. I promise you may not have heard of them before, but you may hear of them for the first time on your exam. It's just one of those high yield things. I promise you there, I know I'm going over these antibodies. So definitely keep those in mind. And then if they give you a question about a patient that has like a history of like breast cancer, and then this person has like a profound ataxia and all that stuff, right? That's something called like a limbic encephalitis. And it's very high yield to know on MBME exams that is associated with antibodies against HU and YO. So HU, so anti-HU, and YO, anti-YO antibodies, okay? And then one other thing your friends at the MBME love to test is like autoimmune hepatitis, right? So autoimmune hepatitis, very high yield to know about. Basically, there are two types, right? There's like a type 1 autoimmune hepatitis, and there's a type 2 autoimmune hepatitis. And the type 1 is associated with anti-smooth muscle antibodies, right? That's one you definitely want to know. And then the type 2 is associated with anti-liver kidney microsomal antibodies. Typically, you'll see autoimmune hepatitis in the setting of like a lupus-like syndrome. In fact, some people call it like a lupoid hepatitis, okay? So those are big picture things you want to keep at the back of your mind. And then if, for example, a person has, you know, they tell you that a person, like you get an exam question and this person seems to, you know, they keep having like this painful vision loss that then gets better after a few weeks when they get high dose corticosteroids. And then they have like these recurring episodes where they have like a sensory level, right? Where like, oh, they lose all sensation below the nipples, right? So like T4, I remember there's a mnemonic for that, right? Like T4 tit, like tits, like tit poor. And then they lose sensation below like T10 or whatever, blah, 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 blah. Whenever you see all those things, like recurrent episodes of like optic neuritis and recurrent like myelitic episodes, I would hope under those circumstances you're thinking about like, it's almost like an MS variant. It's known as neuromyelitis optica. Okay, neuromyelitis optica. Sometimes people call it Devix, D-E-V-I-C, Devix disease. Okay, so remember that those are associated with like antibodies against NMO. So anti-NMO IgG antibodies. Think about those as being associated with neuromyelitis optica. And then I remember, right, anti-phospholipid antibodies, right? So like recurring pregnancy losses in a person that may have like a history of lupus. Classically, these things tend to show up on MBME exams in a woman that's pregnant and she has like size less than dates. So they'll tell you that, oh, she's at like 30 weeks gestation, but then you measure from like the fundus to the pubic symphysis and it's like 22 centimeters, right? That's size less than dates. That's pretty classic for anti-phospholipid antibody syndrome. And then what if you get a question about a patient that has let's see, I think I've already talked, sorry, I'm giving this mostly from memory. I think I've talked about I think I've talked about it already, where they give you like some fancy pants question about a person that has a history of like, you know, 40-something-year-old female with like jaundice and pruritus. Yeah, that's primary biliary cholangitis, has an association with anti-mitochondrial antibodies. Now, What if they give you a question about a patient that has like hematuria and has like hemoptysis? What kind of autoantibodies are associated with those? Well, I hope you're telling me like antibodies against the glomerular basement membrane, right? Antibodies against the glomerular basement membrane. That is pretty classic for Goodpasture syndrome, right? Goodpasture syndrome. You make autoantibodies against the basement membrane. And then, what if you make antibodies against the desmosomes? What skin disorder is that associated with? Well, I hope you're telling me pemphigus vulgaris, right? You make antibodies against desmosomes, so like desmoglein or anti-desmoplakin antibodies. Those are pretty classic antibodies against, that's classic for pemphigus vulgaris. Then contrast that with its close cousin, right? Like bullous pemphigoid, right? Those people tend to form antibodies against like hemidesmosomes, right? That's a big one you want to remember. Antibodies against hemidesmosomes. Remember, bullous pemphigoid is not as dangerous as pemphigus vulgaris, and bullous pemphigoid is not Nikolsky positive. Okay, these are all high yield things you want to keep in mind for exams. And then, what if they give you a question about a patient that you know has like fat malabsorption, like low weight, and then they tell you that the person has like a rash on extensor surfaces of the upper and lower extremities, that it does not have a silver scale, right? I would hope under those circumstances you're thinking about celiac disease. Remember, celiac disease has an association with anti-gliadin antibodies and also has associations with like anti-tissue transglutaminase and anti-endomysial. So E-N-D-O-M-Y-S-I-A-L. So anti-endomysial antibodies. And then, what if they give you a question about a patient that has... you know, like they've smoked for like a long time and then they've been having trouble like rising from a chair. What are you thinking about, right? That's Lambert-Eaton myasthenic syndrome, right? Remember, in Lambert-Eaton, those people make autoantibodies against like the presynaptic voltage-gated calcium channel, right? So that's a big one you want to keep at the back of your mind. And then, what if they give you a question about a patient that has, they give you a question about a patient that, you know, has been, has lost like vibratory sensation in the lower extremities. And this patient also has like, you know, like some Babinski things going on. So like some upper motor neuron problems from like the corticospinal tract being knocked out. And, like some dorsal column problems. I would hope under those circumstances you're really thinking about like a B12 deficiency, right? Remember, B12 deficiency can be caused by pernicious anemia, right? And in pernicious anemia, you make antibodies against like intrinsic factor or antibodies against the parietal cells, right? So those are all big things you want to keep at the back of your mind for tests. Now, what if they give you a question about, I think I already talked about antiphospholipid antibody syndrome, right? Remember, these people tend to make like lupus anticoagulant, anti-cardiolipin antibodies, right? So those are, again, all big things you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams. Another like weird one you may see on MBMEs is a person having like antibodies against like beta-2 glycoprotein. That's actually pretty classic for antiphospholipid antibody syndrome as well. Again, these are all things they love to test. I'm just trying to think, is there any other high yield thing I've not really mentioned? Yes, so the HLAs, right? So there are some HLAs that are very high yield to know. I think I'm probably going to like, you know, spend time on like three of them that they love to test for whatever reason on MBME exams. Remember your seronegatives or spondyloarthropathies, right? Those tend to be associated with, HLA B27, right? And then what if they give you a question about a patient that, you know, was recently started on a drug for HIV? This patient takes this drug for HIV, and then not long afterwards, they get like a profound anaphylactic reaction and die, right? What kind of drug are you thinking about? Well, I really hope you're thinking about Abacavir. Abacavir is a HIV drug. You need to check for HLA B57 before you start Abacavir, right? Because it has about 8% of people that take Abacavir can get a life-threatening hypersensitivity reaction. So you want to make sure that you go ahead and check autoantibodies against the, like the, I mean, not autoantibodies, but you check for the HLA-B57 of genotype. And then, what if they give you a question about a patient from Iran that has, like, you know, like, the person speaks Farsi, whatever, that has, you know, like painful sores on the, in the buccal mucosa. What is that? That's Behçet's disease, right? That's Behçet's disease. Remember that Behçet's disease has an association with like HLA-B51, right? And remember that the diagnostic test, because I don't know why people keep getting this wrong year after year on MBME exams, but the diagnostic test for Behçet's disease, right, is the pathergy test, like P-A-T-H. I mean, you can do like biopsy or whatever, but there's this test known as the pathergy test. It's like you prick, you do like a certain prick, like a specific like length or whatever, blah, 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 blah. You can read up on it, but P-A-T-H-E-R-G-Y, pathergy test. It's used to like screen or diagnose a Behçet's disease, right? So that's a high yield one you want to keep at the back of your mind. And what if they give you a question about I'm trying to think, is there any other antibody I've not talked about? I feel like I've talked about most of the high yield, or at least the ones that are coming to mind. Yeah, I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. And as I do at the end of every podcast, right, I do offer actually, but before I say that, so please actually like pay attention to this podcast. This is one of those podcasts where, you know, maybe writing the information out on a list, going over it a couple of times, or doing flashcards, probably not the worst idea in the world. Because if you're taking any USMLE exam and you don't get an autoantibody question, you probably, like, something has probably gone horribly wrong on that test. They love to test autoantibodies all the time, right? So you should probably, you know, make sure you understand, know these things, right? I know it's a lot. I mean, I didn't even imagine that it would, my thinking was, oh, this podcast will be like 5 or 10 minutes, but imagine all the antibodies we've talked about. So I definitely know these things if I were you. You're definitely going to see it on your exam. As I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer tutoring for pretty much any exam you can take as a medical person, right? So like I guess not every exam, but like step 1, step 2 CK, step 2 CS, step 3. If you're a medicine resident, like the medicine entering exam or the ABIM board exam, or if you need tutoring for like your preclinical blocks in as a M1 or M2 med student or your third year shelf exams, I also offer tutoring for all those things. And then this longitudinal tutoring that I offer, right, where I if you're a first, second, or third year med student, I teach you for like your block exams or for your shelf exams, but at the same time I teach you for your upcoming USMLE exam. Everyone I've done that with has been very, very successful, because it's like you're learning the material for your block exams, but you're learning USMLE relevant material at the same time and test taking strategy, right? So that again has been very successful with people. So if that's something you're interested in, feel free to reach out to me. And then the last thing I offer is these USMLE booster courses, where if you're, you know, studying for like step 2 CK or step 3, that's a 10-hour course, or step 1, that's a 20-hour course, where in that time frame, I review all the, like most of the high-yield content that you'll likely see on your exam in a very short time frame. It's ideal for someone that has, you know, completed like a pass through the material and feels good about their knowledge base, or a person that is like in the last week of their dedicated period and they want someone to put everything together for them, you know, like on a one-on-one basis. Just reach out to me. I can point you in the right direction with those. And I guess if you have any college body that needs tutoring for like Gen Chem, O Chem, Physics, Biochem, Histology, Physiology, I offer tutoring for all those things. And then if you need like coaching or like advice, you know, like consulting for like ERAS applications, so that's like a med student applying to residency, or AMCAS applications if you're a college student applying to med school, I do offer those as well. So you can either reach out to me through the website, or you can send me an email at divineinterventionpodcasts@gmail.com. So have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I hope to make more in the near future. Thank you and God bless you.